Griffin Mill is the vice president of production at a major Hollywood studio. He knows about ambition, power, money, greed, and the tastes of the American people. Griffin Mill is the main character in Michael Tolkien's first novel, The Player. Mill is based on all the studio executives Tolkien has met since he began writing screenplays 10 years ago. As a screenwriter, Tolkien has pitched a lot of story ideas, most of which have been turned down. In his novel, one rejected screenwriter seeks revenge and sends threatening postcards to Hollywood executive Griffin Mill.
Dear Griffin, I'm still waiting for you to call. You said you'd get back to me. My answering machine is on all the time, so you can't say that you called, but I wasn't in. I told you my idea, you said you wanted to think about it, and you said you'd get back to me. My agent said that was a good sign, the part about getting back to me. I've waited long enough. You lied to me. It's obvious you have no intention of hiring me. In the name of all the writers in Hollywood who get pushed around by executives who know nothing more about movies than what did well last week and have no passion for film, I'm going to kill you.
Did you ever fantasize about writing something like that yourself?
Oh, I sent 10 of them. No, I didn't. I mean, obviously I had the fantasy, otherwise it wouldn't have come up, but actually the book was started because I had this fantasy of killing, right, it started with a fantasy of killing an executive, which obviously any writer's going to go through. And then I started thinking about how much the executives must hate the writers, and I inverted the idea. And at one point I had this fantasy, the original idea of the book was going to be an executive is killing unproduced writers, and he's a serial killer, but nobody ever sees the pattern because the writers are so irrelevant that the police are incapable of piecing together the pattern. But after I got to the first killing, I decided that I wanted to take it a little more seriously.
Let's see how you've imagined the screenwriter's pitch from the perspective of the film executive. Would you do a reading of that?
Sure. 3 or 4 times a week, he heard ideas from writers he didn't know. Most of them had never had a movie produced. Griffin barely remembered the names or the faces. He remembered none of the ideas more than 2 weeks old. He remembered enthusiasm, calculated optimism, and offensive cheeriness, and sometimes a sad, embarrassing panic. Yesterday one had come in. Griffin had already forgotten his name, and he checked it on the calendar. Doug Krieger. Doug Krieger, without saying hello, launched into the story from the effective silence after the brilliant title sequence faded to the rhythm of 100 drummers from Ghana. He was pitching some stupid African adventure story. No one would want to make it. Griffin looked at the names of other writers. Jan never gave them longer than 30 minutes. He never needed more than 15. Some tried to condense their ideas to 25 words, in and out, as they'd learned in some screenwriting class taught by someone who'd made a science of yesterday's formula. They'd talk about the arc of the story. They'd use little code words and phrases like paradigm and first act bump. They were exact. At minute 23, she finds out. What does she find out? That this movie won't get made. They talk about the rules of the genre. They'd set the scene with casting. Jeff Bridges and Meryl Streep are locked in a bank vault. They combine stories. It's No Way Out meets Jagged Edge with a twist from The Searchers. They came in with big ideas, rebellion, divorce, revenge, honor. They offered atmosphere. It's sort of a red mood. It's kind of a gritty future. It's funny. Each idea represented a million adjustments to reconcile the difference between the writer's movie of his dreams, which would be the really immortal movie, that tour through the brilliant connections of his freely associating but always focused mind, and the studio's version of that dream, toward the production of which the writer conceded the banal necessity to tell a story. The writers leapt to all this accommodation in anticipation of the 30-minute audience they'd have with Griffin Mill, that chance of a lifetime to impress their pure, almost unknowable genius on the mediating taste of someone who knew what America wanted to see.
In your meetings, in the meetings you've had with film executives, what has your style of pitching your screenplays been like?
Well, actually, I tend to go on too long. I pitched a script a couple of years ago. A producer and I went out and pitched the script, and he said, you know, just boil it down to 5 minutes, and I would take, you know, maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes to tell the story. And finally, I wrote the script on spec and sold it in a day and a half, and they made the movie, and it's coming out in the fall.
Oh, so you really have a movie coming out?
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Gleaming the Cube.
And what's it about?
It's about a Vietnamese boat child who is adopted into an Orange County, completely middle-class family, and his skateboard, 16-year-old skateboard punk brothers. You're asking me to pitch the story.
Yep.
And I wrote it. It's hard for me to pitch it. Actually, I got it backwards. It's really about a 15-year-old Orange County skate punk whose family adopted a Vietnamese Bow Child when they were both 5 or 6 years old. The skate punk is the monster that every parent doesn't want to have, and the adopted child has become the apple of his parents' eye. The adopted child is killed, and his death is made to look like a suicide. The skateboarder has to solve the... First has to find out why his brother killed himself, finds out his brother didn't kill himself, and then has to go straight in order to solve the crime and make everything straight in the end.
That was, what, about a 40-second summary?
Yeah, but it was more than 25 words.
Right. But that's what you have to do, though, right? You have to really have it boiled down to around 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Is that true, or do you really have to do that?
You see, I think that they're right. You know, I'm on Griffin's side, at least in his contempt for the writers. I think that the truth is that the audience has a very short attention span. Any good idea should be able to boil down any movie idea to something pretty brief. And I don't know. You're asking me these questions that are hard to answer. That's really what the book is about. I don't have any pat answer. I think that if you're going to be in Hollywood at a certain point, you have to understand the game. And I wrote the book because I didn't want to write a movie. I wanted to write something that was internal and was all inside and had actually very little physical action and a lot of emotional and moral action. Gleaming the Cube ends with a 15-minute skateboard chase on the freeway. The player is different.
The vice president in your novel considers himself a player. That's the title of your book, The Player.
Yes.
And he says that the player's credo is, I love the audience, I am the audience.
Sure.
You want to explain that?
Yeah, I think that if you want to really be successful in Hollywood, you can't try to outsmart the audience. You have to have that mass taste. You have to really like big, dumb, stupid, widescreen comedies. You have to like happy endings. You have to, you have to like movies about people who get diseases and everybody in the family rallies around them. You know, you have to like situation comedies and like that process. And I think that I think the executives I've seen who sort of have a kind of an attitude of the, almost like a drug dealer's attitude, which is, it's like they're not going to take it, but they'll sell it. You can't really last at that. You have to love it.
Have you tried to write screenplays solely because you think they'd be saleable?
That was Gleaming the Cube, and I did it.
That's the one that's actually got made.
That's right. And I picked up the phone, and I made one phone call and sold it in about 3 days after I finished it.
Boy, you must have been really cynical after that.
No, then I sat down and didn't have another meeting for 2 years, and with the money I got from Gleaming the Cube, I wrote The Player.
Oh, I see. So this book is the result of having sold a screenplay that even you, the writer, had no respect for.
No, it's not that I didn't have any respect for it. Okay. I really liked the story that I told you, and I liked that. I liked that script. It's just that it's not a question of respect. Actually, it's really respecting the process of getting a... There's nothing harder than getting a successful movie. I mean, it's very, very difficult.
Why did you want to write screenplays in the first place?
Because I wanted to make a dent on the culture, because I'd been staring at movies all my life. The movies were really exciting and challenging and literate and emotionally complicated from the 60s up to the early 70s. And a lot of smart writers were drawn to Hollywood because it seemed like the novel was dead, and the academic novel had gone away from story and had gotten very formal and wasn't all that involving. And so the movies just seemed like the best place to go and tell stories. Actually, I was a journalist until 78, and I came out here. By the time I came out here, Rocky had already hit, and the kinds of things that I was interested in writing about were harder to sell. The other thing that's going on now is that I think that, and I'm going to be curious to see what happens with the movies, because literature, because fiction is becoming acceptable now, and I think that if I were 25 and trying to write now, I don't even know if I would have gone into the movies. I think I would have just gone straight into novels. But I did both anyway.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Michael Tolkien's novel, The Player, is published by the Atlantic Monthly Press. This is Fresh Air.